Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Hey, good morning. Welcome to Solder Smoke 59. It's the 20th of May, 2007, 0640, Greenwich Mean Time. Here I was thinking earlier this morning about what switches to use in a step attenuator. You guys know how it is. These are the kind of thoughts that come to you early in the morning over a cup of coffee in the ham shack. I don't think normal people think about these things at 5 a.m., but, well, there we were. Thinking about what switches to use in a step attenuator. I was probably caused to think about this by the picture on the front cover of Tony Fishpool's book, Simple Test Equipment for the QRP-er. Tony and Graham have on the front cover a really nice picture of a step attenuator built into a Altoids tin. Tony showed me the actual product at the Kempton Park radio rally not long ago. And I was just thinking about what switches I was going to use for this project. I turned to the computer and fired up my mail program and called up the latest traffic from the QRPL mailing list. And lo and behold, right there in the first two or three messages was a very thorough discussion of what kind of switches to use in a step attenuator. And I sat back in my chair and said, wow, I mean, this is really a case of kindred spirits, and QRPL is definitely the place to be for getting news and useful information about QRP and home brewing. So I just thought I'd start off this week with a call for three cheers for those who keep the QRPL mailing list going. It's a real great resource. I know it's not always easy to keep it going and to keep the rules, to make sure that the rules are observed. There aren't many rules, but it seems to be working, so three cheers for those who keep the QRPL list going. Great. I guess another other kind of internet news. I came across a website, actually. Somebody sent in the link. I had seen it a while back, but our recent discussion of the QST article on the 2-meter AM transceiver, the club saver they called it, caused somebody out there to think about a project and a rig known as the Fredbox. This is a solid state 2-meter AM rig built in the UK some years back, and the schematic for it and a lot of information about the project has been dug up and placed on the web by Roger G3XBM. He's got a really excellent website. I've got a link to it on the gadgeteer.us Gadgeteer News website, so you can get there very easily. But it's a very nice rig, and it was part of, and I think really caused a resurgence of interest in a resurgence of interest in 2-meter AM here in the UK. There's a VHF AM Yahoo group discussing what these guys are up to. And last year I was for a while caught up in it, and I had my receiver tuned to the 2-meter AM frequencies. I was using a Hamtronics down converter to my trusty Drake 2B, and I made a brief effort to get a Heathkit tour, a Benton Harbor lunchbox going on 2-meter AM, but I was a bit discouraged because I didn't hear many signals. There's not a lot of 2-meter AM activity in central London, guys, believe it or not. But anyway, maybe we'll do that some other time. Maybe in Italy. I have all the equipment and the crystals and the makings of a 2-meter AM project right here in the shack, and I'll just ship it all off to Italy, and who knows, we We may be on 2 meter AM from central Rome here in 6 months or so. Continuing on internet news, I put some new videos on the Sutter Smoke video page. There's an event coming up, and maybe this weekend. It's called the Maker Faire. I'm a big fan of the Maker blog, available on the net. Always a lot of good kind of homebrew information there. It's not focused exclusively on electronics. There is some macrame and painting and things like that, but it's all about people making things with their hands, and they do quite a bit of kind of innovative stuff on electronics, and it's an interesting blog. I look at it just about every morning, get a lot of good ideas from there, I think. They're sponsoring this, what they call Maker Faire. It's been described at least once as sort of Burning Man light, kind of maybe Burning Man, but for a home audience, if you know what I mean. And it's not out in the middle of the desert. I think they're doing it in San Francisco. But there's a video on there of two people sort of describing what was what's going on with Maker Faire. I think you'd enjoy that video. Also, the video on Dilbert going to the doctor as a little boy and getting diagnosed as having the knack, the electronic knack, the ham radio knack. That video is back up on YouTube. It was taken down for a while as part of some copyright dispute, but it's back up there. I don't know about the legality of it all. I'm not posting it. I'm just telling you about it. It's up there, and I have a link to the video. I think, well, look, we all have it. If you're listening to Solder Smoke, you're probably afflicted with this disease, whether you know it or not. I hate to tell you, but you too have the knack. And it's really interesting to see what the doctor said about young Dilbert when his mother brought him in, and how she reacted to the news that he was doomed to become an electronics engineer. Check it out. Also have something up there a little bit different on the video site. It's a rock video. But it's a rock video kind of that's kind of homebrew. It's kind of focused on the early days of the space program. And it's just kind of different. And I just thought that many of you guys would get a kick out of it. So there's a link there, and if you feel so inclined, check on it. Click on it. I'm sure it's not for everybody, but I think a good portion of the Solder Smoke community will like it. Let's see, what else? I think while visiting, while visiting another good blog, Slashdot, of course, Slashdot, extremely famous and important in the in the Silicon Valley high-tech computer world. I was reading Slashdot the other day, and there was a great little article in there that led me to a great article about Bill Hewlett of Hewlett-Packard fame. And there's a move afoot to make the garage that Hewlett-Packard started in a national historical site. Good move. It's important. It's an important place. And electronics in garages and electronics in basements, well, it should be important to all Solder Smoke fans. Anyway, I found this this article about Bill Hewlett and his early days in electronics, and how he and Packard set up HP and really led to the takeoff that became Silicon Valley. There's a connection there that I wasn't aware of, and I think some of you guys probably know about this, but I didn't. And as I read through, what it is as I read through the article on Hewlett and Packard, I learned that their professor at Stanford, because they got started as grad students at Stanford, and their professor was the famous Terman, Frederick Terman, and the author of The Radio Engineer's Handbook, which I have in my hand right now, one of the real seminal texts on radio engineering, and a book that's used by many radio amateurs, especially guys who are still using vacuum tubes. The glow bugs and boat anchor community, if you look at what they're doing, you see frequent references to Terman. Anyway, I didn't know that Terman was the professor of Hewlett and Packard. And I just thought that was interesting. And it caused me to go over to the bookshelf here and pull out my copy of the Radio Engineer's Handbook by Terman. And I just started flipping through it. And it's got written on it, it was obviously purchased by a student. It was purchased by a student on my copy was purchased by a student on the 4th of March, 1946. He paid $4.80 for it. A good buy even then. I noticed that I probably bought it at a ham fest somewhere, and I paid $1.50 for it. Even a better buy. The guy who owns it is named L.V. Blake. And for some reason, I just said, hey, I wonder what happened to L.V. Blake. I wonder what, you know, if we could find out anything about him. So, of course, my thoughts turned to another California outfit, the boys there at Google. And I Googled him. I Googled L.V. Blake. Didn't expect to get any hits, but I got lots of hits. And I think you guys know that Lamont V. Blake went on from Stanford to become quite an important engineer and physicist. And he was the author of many books, very important in the field, and especially a book on antennas that I'm sure many of you have come across and perhaps even used in your studies in BSEE programs. So anyway, I thought that was kind of neat, and I now have even a stronger connection to my very nice bound edition of Radio Engineer's Handbook by Terman. One other thing I noticed in reading about Hewlett and Packard was that their first really successful commercial product was an audio amplifier. And apparently the problem was that they needed a good, stable audio amplifier that would have kind of the same level of output over a wide range of frequencies. And they came up with a design. I think it was the HP-200A and then HP-200B audio amplifiers. And one of the secrets of keeping it all stable and keeping the output nice and clean was negative feedback. And I think one of the devices that they used was they just put some sort of light bulb in the feedback circuit, and it helps in a very simple way keep the output level at the same level over a wide range of frequencies. This product was used by Disney in the production of, I think, the 1940 film Fantasia. Anyway, with all of our discussion of feedback and test gear, I thought that Solder Smoke listeners would be interested in this, so I put the links both to the article about Hewlett and Packard and Terman and their garages, and to a page that has the circuit diagram for the HP-200B audio oscillator. I guess I was calling them amplifier, but it's an audio oscillator. Anyway, they're up on the Gadgeteer News webpage, and I think you guys would be interested in taking a look at that. Moving on, what else we have here now? We have this week's special event. It's Dayton time, guys. It's time for the big Dayton Hamvention. And 4 days in May, the big QRP homebrew event has already taken place. As I said last week, most of us were not able to go, sadly. But we had our man in Dayton there, reporting live. Well, he was recording live at the scene, and very, very big thanks to Bob Crane at W8SX, who volunteered to serve as the Solder Smoke correspondent at the 4 days in May event. Bob has sent us in some really great interviews with some of the well-known participants of the QRP homebrew community, the guys who really write a lot of the articles that we read and build a lot and design a lot of the projects that we use, and we now have them. We have their voices, and we're going to put them on here at Solder Smoke. I think it's really great because most of these guys are CW people mostly, and they're somewhat reluctant, some of them, to come on voice here on Solder Smoke. So it's really great that we have them recorded by Bob, and we'll put them on. We have interviews with Dick Pasco, G0 BPS. Then we have an interview with Graham Firth, G3 MFJ, and George Dobbs of the GQRP Club, G3 RJV. I've never heard. I've been reading Spratt for many, many years. I've never heard George's voice before, and so it was a real pleasure to hear him and put him on Solder Smoke. Then we have an interview with Jim K8IQY of Manhattan Technique fame, and well known for many other projects using the Manhattan soldering technique. And it was really fun to hear Jim talk about his meeting at Dayton with a guy who I think is really the hero to all of us in the homebrew Solder Smoke QRP game, and that's Wes Hayward, W7ZOI. Jim talks a little bit about having a discussion, and it must have been really interesting with Wes about the relative pros and cons of Manhattan style construction versus ugly construction, with of course Jim being the proponent of Manhattan, and telling us how Wes was more in favor of building it fast and building it ugly. And then the last interview is with our hero, with Wes Hayward, W7ZOI. A real delight to have Wes's voice finally here on Solder Smoke, and I think you guys will enjoy it and certainly find it inspirational. So with no further ado, I know you're all anxious to hear the voices from Dayton. I'll put them on now in that order.
Hi, this is Dick Pasco, G0BPX. I'm president of QRPARCI, and I'm here in Dayton, Ohio at the 4 Days in May event.
Yes, Bill. I hope you're having a good time there in London, and we'll talk to you on the air sometime, perhaps from Italy, which will be a lot of fun. But this year, the 4 Days in May was wonderful.
No, it was better than that. It was superb. It's probably the best that we've ever had. I've been working on for about 3 years to try and get Wes Hayward here. He was stunning. He was better than ever we could have expected. The level of speakers has been magnificent, especially with the recent announcement of the K3 and getting one of the designers here, completely unknown to us that had been involved. But Lyle also did a superb job on DSP. Others, brilliant.
Hello, I'm Graham Firth, G3MFJ from Leeds in England, co-author of the test equipment manual that Bill reviewed a few weeks ago with Tony. I'm over here in Dayton to spend time with the QRP hams at 4 Days in May. We've had a great day today. We've enjoyed seeing so many people that I see every time I come, and it's wonderful to renew old acquaintances. I'm here with George, G3RJV. Can I now pass it over to George to say a few words?
Absolutely. Hello, George, GCRJV, and I'm in Dayton, enjoying myself again. I don't know, I've been here almost every year for about 20 years, and we normally take part in the last 10 years, in a little bit more than 10, I think now, in 4 Days in May, which is a program for anybody who is a QRP fan. A stream of lectures, special events each night, and all linked with the Dayton Hamvention. So if you've never been before, well, it's a really good week.
Okay, this is Jim Kirchy, K8IQY from Fenton, Michigan. And I'm here at Dayton at the Hamvention. Just spent the day listening to the seminar speakers. There were a number of folks that talked today. I can't remember all the names. The highlight for me, of course, was meeting one of my heroes, Wes Hayward, W7ZOI. And Wes and I have corresponded off and on over the years. And I guess everybody who's in ham radio who has built anything looks to Wes as sort of being the guy of designing and building, and particularly building. And I suppose getting on the air, too. I just spent some time this evening kind of one-on-one with Wes and brought along my original 2N240 rig, the rig that won the NorCal design/building contest back a number of years ago, that was dreamed up by Wayne Burdick, N6KR, to design something using a maximum of 2N22 transistors, and I designed and built a 40-meter rig that runs about 2.5 watts, and that was the rig that won that contest. And I also brought along my 2N220, sort of a derivative of the 2N240 design with some refinements and all that. Anyway, Wes and I were having fun with each other because he's a very strong proponent of building it ugly and building it fast and getting it done. And I spend a bit more time and build Manhattan style, and I like that method, and you end up with a really pretty rig, and it's nicely laid out, and you can find the test points that you're looking for, the signals in the rig and all that sort of thing. But it was really, really neat to sit there for 30 minutes and chat with Wes about building and designing and all that sort of thing with somebody who's been my idol sort of from the beginning.
Hi, Bill. This is Wes. And Bill and listeners, this is Wes, W7ZOI. And I'm slowly recovering after 4 days in May. Talked about a new, at least for me, IF amplifier circuit. It's I call it a hybrid cascode. It's unlike the normal cascode circuit that might use a pair of bipolars or a pair of FETs stacked above each other. This one uses a bipolar transistor on top of a junction FET. And it turns out it's a simple circuit that is rather robust. It has good IM properties, low noise figure, and very good gain control characteristics. And ended up putting three stages of the stuff together, and along with a diff amp and some other circuitry, and ended up with an AGC system with about 100 dB of, or more than 100 dB of gain control range, and good IM properties, good dynamics, and it's simple and cheap. It's the kind of thing that will people anywhere in the world should be able to get the parts to put it together. Jeff Dom, WA7MLH, and I are planning on a paper for QSP or QEX, hopefully QSP.
And my favorite quote from the day is, see, you can do better than the...
I was harassing... some of the folks, and one of the points that I tried to make was in my talk was that there is a lot of reason to experiment, and that one can actually build stuff and improve on the performance that you presently find in the appliances. And if you just keep at it, you can actually force the evolution in some small way, and so it's a kick to. To participate in such madness.
Great. You're having a good time then.
Oh, I'm having a good time, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
And you bet. You bet.
Oh, man, that was kind of weak. Stand by. There you go. There you go. It's a better one. Time for Solder Smoke Mailbag, guys. Let's see. Wow, that was great. It was great listening to those interviews. I thought that was terrific. And thanks again to Bob Crane, W8SX, for being the Solder Smoke correspondent. this week. A lot of stuff in the mailbag, and a lot of it really very kind of practical use. A while back, I mentioned the problem that arises from running out of low-value resistors before you run out of the high-value kilo-ohm and mega-ohm resistors. I always like to buy these packs of paper strips with resistors on them. What I usually do is I have a piece of old an old board here in the shack, and I tack the strips of resistors onto the board. It's my resistor board, and it saves me time. I don't have to fumble around and look for resistors of the proper value when building something. I just go to the board. I have written in ballpoint pen the values of the resistors on the strip off to the side, and I'm able to pluck off the resistors that I need very quickly. But of course, I find that I'm plucking off low value resistors in much greater much more often than the high value resistors. You know, you need these low value resistors because, well, you have a lot of resistors in the emitter circuits of amplifiers that are down quite low value, sometimes 5, 10 ohms, 12 ohms, in that range. So you run out of these things, and you end up with a board with all the 10 mega ohm resistors you need, but very few of the low value resistors that you really need. So I mentioned this a while back on Solder Smoke, and this week Bill WD5DZG writes in saying that he recognizes that this is a common problem, a common ailment for among homebrewers, and he points us in the right direction here. He says that there's an outfit out there called Nightfire Electronic Kits. You could just Google Nightfire, one word, Nightfire Electronics, and you'll see that they offer a wide variety of quarter ohm resistors, and you can select as many individual 10 packs as you like. It says for a few bucks plus postage, you get quite a good variety of the low value resistors that you need for these construction projects. So go for it, give them a look. Sounds like Nightfire Electronics is the solution to our low value resistor shortage. Who else here? Roger W9HAU sends in an email. I had asked about why we were getting so many hits from China, but without seeing a whole lot of megabytes being downloaded. Roger is sad to inform me that we don't have a huge listening community in China, and he's got some experience in this area, and he thinks it's more involved in just sort of probing sites, that there are folks over there who spend a lot of time. Yes, there are in every country, let's face it. I think we probably have more of these folks in the States than anywhere else, but out there kind of just probing sites for various reasons. But he doesn't think that the large number of hits that we're getting reflect a great a base of Solder Smoke listeners there. It's a shame. I wish we did have more listeners, and if you are listening from China, again, please send us an email. We'd like to hear from you. We very much like the worldwide listener base that Solder Smoke has. It makes it interesting, and it is a worldwide hobby. So I'm really hoping that there are some folks who are actually listening to the program in China. Send us an email if you are. Tom NC0O sends an email thanking us for Solder Smoke and saying that it has caused him to get back into electronic home brewing. Well, welcome back, Tom, and glad that you're listening. Here's a really interesting series of emails that I got from Scott Haley. Scott talks about the W7ZOI power meter that I've been telling you guys about. And I noted that when I turn the meter on, I get a reading. It's not, the meter doesn't sit at zero. It pops up a bit. And Wes on his website describes this, and I hope I'm getting this right, as being at least partially the result of the real sensitivity of the logarithmic chip in there. And in essence, what it's doing is it's detecting thermal noise in the components of the input circuit. I read, and I remember in one of my favorite books about electronics, From Amps to Amperes by F.A. Wilson, it's one of the Babini books, Wilson describes how noise is generated inside electronic components. I mean, we're all familiar with static noise, lightning strikes, and even cosmic galactic noise from the sun, all that kind of noise. But there's also, as Wilson points out and as West notes on his site, noise generated by the components inside equipment. I mean, these components are being bombarded by thermal photons and electrons in there are moving about, and so there's a certain amount of noise generated just by a resistor sitting there at room temperature. And I think, unless I've got this wrong, I think that that's part of what the W7ZOI power meter picks up when you turn it on without anything hooked up to the input. I think that's very interesting, and Scott was intrigued by it also. He talked about how he had learned about this kind of thermal noise in his electronic engineering courses, but that it had all been highly mathematical, and that my mention of this in the W7ZOI wattmeter context was the first time he had heard about it kind of in the real world. I wrote back to him noting that, this is one of the reasons, I think, that when you read about radio telescopes or even optical telescopes using real sophisticated electronics, very often they'll be cooled. There'll be big cooling apparatus around the electronics to keep the electronics very, very cold, I think, to cut down on, I think the idea is to cut down on this kind of thermal noise being generated in the circuitry. So, anyway, this got me thinking, guys. I wonder what would happen, I don't want to do it, but I wonder what would happen if you took a W7ZOI watt meter and put it in the fridge. Would it, after you cool it down a bit, would you get a lower reading? I haven't done the math. I suppose I should. Wes has been encouraging me to do the math. But I wonder if the kind of cooling that you could get in a fridge would produce a noticeable effect on the kind of no connection reading of a W7ZOI power meter. And I guess the other alternative you could do is you could just take a lead and put an ordinary resistor, say I guess a 50 ohm resistor, across the two clips on the end of the lead, leave the power meter safely outside the freezer, and then just put the resistor inside the fridge and see if the reading drops. You may have to get a little bit colder to get any noticeable impact. I think I mentioned a few months ago that I went on a sleepover to the with my for my son's 9th birthday. We went on a camp out in the Science Museum here in London, and one of the exhibits that they had for the kids was the amazing world of liquid nitrogen and what happens if you pour liquid nitrogen on things. And believe me, it was great fun. I mean, you wouldn't want to have any of it laying around the shack for the kids to play with, believe me, because they showed a film of what happens if you just touch this stuff onto your fingers. It's basically goodbye fingers. But I wonder if cooling that resistor down to those kind of temperatures would result in a significant decrease or noticeable decrease in the no connection value on a W7ZOI power meter. These are the kind of questions that keep us up at night, guys. And I hope somebody out there would have some thoughts about whether we'd notice it. I'm not about to go out and buy any liquid nitrogen. Maybe some dry ice, but that'd be fun. But anyway, any thoughts on that would be appreciated. We need to get to the bottom of this issue. Other mail, Lynn K5AVJ sends in a nice email from Buffalo Gap, Texas. Talks about his interest in solder smoke and home brewing, and thanks us for the show. And then this is a good idea. Some correspondents wrote in, well, not correspondents, but some folks wrote in and said that just as we had a correspondent at the 4 Days in May event at Dayton, there are other events coming up that might call for the appointment of Solder Smoke special correspondents. There's the big European Handfest at Friedrichshafen. And then there's something else that goes on during the summer at MIT, the flea at MIT, the big electronic flea market that I've been reading about for years but have never been able to visit. If anybody during the course of the summer or in the months ahead thinks they're going to be at an event that would be of interest to Solder Smoke listeners, just send me an email and we'll make arrangements for you to serve as a correspondent as Bob did at the FDIM event. I think it adds something to the show and I think it would be great to have those kind of correspondents out there. I know there's a lot of events during the summertime, so think about it. All you have to do is bring some sort of recording device with you and talk to some of the folks who were there and share information that you think would be of interest to the Solder Smoke community. All right, that's it. Exciting show this week. Thanks again to Bob Crane, and thanks to all of you for listening. Please send feedback to us, and it's really great to hear from folks sending ideas and thoughts, and it's always appreciated. So that's it for this week. 7-3s from London to the Big Solder Smoke crew.